by this, but you must fight it.
And finally, Colin, what you learned from this woman who you shared with the world.
I'm not going to spend an hour telling you everything I've learned. What I will say is that she brought me to this moment. And she would tell me that I'm the hand at the small of your back. I may let you stumble, but I will never let you fall. She has played a third parent role in my life, my entire life. And, the sense of pride and the ability to walk out of the door knowing that I have this woman in my corner has allowed me to do many things. And I'm just so appreciative of Bob and Rita here to have put such heart into this project and to really care about it and to really nurture it to its completion. And I'm proud to be sitting next to them, and I'm proud of this documentary. It's the first of my grandmother's life, and it's just an amazing step forward for people to learn about her.
Colin Johnson, the grandson of Dr. Maya Angelou, along with Bob Hercules and Rita Coburn-Wack, co-directors of the new film Maya Angelou and Still I Rise. I spoke to them at the Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah. If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Happy birthday to our archivist, Brendan Allen. Democracy Now! Has several job openings. We're hiring a broadcast engineer, as well as a director of finance and operations, and a director of development. You can go to democracynow.org for more information. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Nermeen Sheikh, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, Juan Carlos Davila, Pedro Rodriguez. Special thanks to John Hamilton and Nicole Salazar. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our host, Joe Uris. Today, we'll look at the political landscape after the abrupt death of Justice Antonin Scalia.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Oregon Student Nurses Association Convention 2016, Empowered for Excellence. That's taking place February 20th from 8 to 4:30 at the PCC Sylvania campus in Portland. This year's keynote speaker will be Dana Bjarnason, the Chief Nursing Officer and Vice President of OHSU. Topics covered by the conference include flight nursing, forensic nursing, veteran care, public health nursing, and more. Again, that's the Oregon Student Nurses Association Convention 2016, Empowered for Excellence, taking place Saturday, February 20th from 8 to 4:30 at the PCC Sylvania campus, 12000 Southwest 49th Avenue in Portland. The Oregon Student Nurses Association, working to lead the future of nursing. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month is A Streetcar Named Desire, showing Thursday, February 18th at 7 p.m. Winner of 5 Academy Awards and considered the first dramatic jazz score of a film, 1951's A Streetcar Named Desire remains a landmark which forced the medium into a new, raw, emotional, mature kind of expression. Again, that's A Streetcar Named Desire, Thursday, February 18th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The 18th Annual Homelessness Marathon Broadcast, a national town hall discussion on poverty and homelessness in America.
I think it would be pretty startling for the majority of the public to know that within about 2 blocks from the White House itself, there are homeless people sleeping in parks.
This year will be live from the streets of Washington, D.C. That's the Homelessness Marathon Broadcast, coming to you soon and heard right here on this radio station.
This station is KBOO Portland. Hear the Homelessness Marathon live beginning at 5 p.m. Wednesday, February 17th, and continuing until 6 a.m. Thursday morning.
Yeah, he. day this court is now in session. His Honor, Judge Pigmeat Martin Poseidon. Yeah, he, the coat of swing, is just about ready to do that thing. I don't want no tears, I don't want no lies. Above all, I don't want no alibis. This judge is hip, and that ain't all. He'll give you time if you're big or small. Fall in line, or this coat is neat. Peace, brother.
Whoa, here comes the judge. Here comes the judge. Everybody know that he is the judge.
Your next door neighbor. Honor, out of this courtroom, out of this courtroom.
Judge, your honorship high, sir. Did I hear you say order in the court?
Yes, I said order.
Well, I'll take two cans of beer, please.
You remember me?
No, who are you, boy?
Well, I'm the fella that introduced you to your wife.
To my wife?
Yeah.
Life, you son of a gun, you. Come November election time, you vote your way and I vote mine. Case is a tie and the money gets spent. Vote for Pigmeat Martin, President. I am the judge. I am the judge. Everybody knows that I am the judge. I am the judge. I am the judge. Everybody know I am the judge.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not the judge. This is kind of an old thing. I hope you hope you're tolerant of it. Pigmeat Markham, who was a very, very funny man and was on the what's called the Chitlin' Circuit. You know, segregation was so ubiquitous in America, still is to some extent, but it was so ubiquitous that there was an entire touring route for black comedians, black performers, black dancers, so on, that went through the South and into the North. And, for example, the prime place where you could perform was the Apollo Theater in New York City. Pigmeat Markham was one such great performer. And this is an appropriate song because of the irony of the situation with the Supreme Court right now. By the way, that recording was made in 1949. Just to put it in perspective. Well, all right, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with Abe Proctor and Joe Uris, but Abe is unable to be here today. And we're going to talk about a little bit of history and a whole lot of fact and a lot of lies and the weird, very, very weird constitutional crisis that seems to be in front of us because of, and this is absolutely the case, the intransigence and insanity of a Republican Party who has pulled itself away from its responsible positions to a position of supporting kind of reactionary craziness. The idea of, a six-day creation of the world, the idea that women don't have a right to have control of their bodies, the idea that voting rights should be limited, all the things that are happening right now come to a head with the judge event, with the death of Judge Antonin Scalia. And I want to talk about that a lot. But first, because I can't resist it, I want to make some things clear, because there's been a lot of confusion. And the thing that is most important, I think, is to understand, since originalism seems to be a topic for Scalia and others, or was for Scalia and others, about the court, I want to make clear a couple of things. First of all, the Constitution itself is quite specific. It says, within the powers of the president, he shall have power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, and it's a list of things, and the last was judges of the Supreme Court and other officers of the courts. So, essentially, the president has the right to appoint to the court, but it's an advice or consent situation. That is, he makes an appointment or she makes an appointment. It is taken to the Senate. The Senate either approves or disapproves of the choice. This is usually, until modern, very modern times, a really simple thing. It was a kind of barely any hearings for the most part. What changed all that was the Supreme Court decision, you know, in 1954 and then 56, when essentially the court did away with segregation. This was a court under Earl Warren. Earl Warren was appointed by Eisenhower. The expectation of the Earl Warren appointment was that he would continue on the tradition of what was then responsible conservatism. But he, along with many others, saw the need to create equality and justice in America. And this was what precipitated what is now a circus to get appointments passed. But this is all very clear. Political power shall extend to all cases in law. Judicial power, pardon me, shall extend to all cases in law and equity under the Constitution, the laws of the United States and treaties made and so on. Well, all of that was clear in the Constitution, but when the court was assembled with Chief Justice Marshall, it was a moment of great importance because in some very small cases from our perspective, in McCulloch versus Maryland in 1819 and before that, in Marbury versus Madison, Marshall laid down in unmistakable terms the principle of judicial review. And here's a quote. It is emphatically the providence and duty of the judicial department to say what the law is. Now, that is, from the point of view of originalism, that is the original declaration of the role of the court, and it establishes the power of the court to review law. There's no question about that. I think it's important to understand that. It's also important to understand how politicized this whole process has become. Okay, there's a lot of stuff to consider here. Scalia was kind of an entertaining guy, but a deep-seated reactionary, inventing or pushing an idea called originalism within the courts. And there'll be a discussion of that topic after this show sometime this morning. But some interesting facts. Scalia died of an apparent heart attack at the property, the ranch, of Point Dexter. Remember Point Dexter? He was the guy who was convicted in the Iran-Contra affair and then was pardoned by President Bush. So was it Bush or was it, I'm not sure. Anyway, the pardoning of Poindexter was an important moment, which essentially said, well, it doesn't matter what you do, as long as we, the people in power are okay with it, we can just, you know, President of the United States, we can forgive you and set you free. Essentially, with the courts establishing the idea that, in fact, the government of the United States takes precedent over state governments, which is Marbury versus Madison and McCulloch versus Maryland in 1819, we have an establishment of the process, which is in effect now. And there's no question about the power of the Supreme Court. And there hasn't been a question of that power for a long, long time. Now, in the face of all that, here's what's happening. We have seen the Republican Party become, I don't know whether captured is the right word, but certainly moved to the right to the extent that its popular support rests on people who believe non-fact as science, people who insist on a six-day creation, people who insist essentially on not giving women a right to control their own bodies, people who are engaged in an extremely reactionary attack upon the voting rights of persons of color throughout the United States. This is very serious. And the court was about to hear a number of cases which, given the 5-4 makeup of this court prior to the death of Scalia, would have probably thrown us back to another and darker time. Ironically, the death of Scalia creates a 4-4 court, 4 so-called liberals and 4 so-called conservatives, and means that if there is a tie on any issue, it goes back to whatever court brought the matter to the Supreme Court, and that is where the standing is. So this is a very important thing. Now, the response of the Senate is incredible. Essentially, the Senate, the Republican senators, are saying, pardon me, we will not hear any nominee from the Obama administration. The argument being, well, this is the last year of Obama. We shouldn't have to do that. As if this was some kind of precedent, some kind of legitimate thing. The problem with that, and it is a really important fact, is there have been many, many such Supreme Court appointments in the last year. I think, what is it, 19 of them. And this is just ignored. And what we've seen more and more in the process of all of this is a constant pattern of ignoring reality in favor of some kind of mythic America. And American people, being poorly taught, are easily persuaded to fall for that stuff. So this is really important. What has to happen now, I guess, and what will happen now is I assume Obama will make an appointment, and he has two major strategies, assuming he wants to create a court that is far more liberal. He can make an appointment of somebody who exactly represents his politics. Now, of course, to say what Obama's politics is a little unclear anyway, because he's far more conservative than the fantasy or the presentation that he made in 2008 as a candidate for president. But assuming he pushes for a very liberal justice, he will be blocked and the process will become one that will be stalled through the election. Now, what that does is that makes this election, the 16 election, incredibly important, because Supreme Court decisions are almost forever. And the power of that court has become more and more significant in the face of the peculiar politics our society is involved in. It's really important to understand that. Much, much more important than the past. By the way, most appointments to the Supreme Court in the old days didn't even have a congressional hearing. It was with the 54 desegregation action that we began to see these hearings becoming more and more significant. So it became a struggle between what? Social justice and a reactionary model which kept persons of color in the thrall of the state and the thrall of the public, of the general community. And really important. The other strategy of Obama, which he may pursue, which in some ways makes sense, is to find a candidate who is more to the middle, maybe liberal, but with a long judicial history, with a very legitimate position, someone out of the courts or out of some important posting. By the way, there's no rule that a Supreme Court justice must be a judge prior to the appointment or even a lawyer. So it's really, really very, very interesting opportunity for Obama. But the strategy here in choosing someone who is under any rational circumstances a moderate would place the Senate, the dominating Republicans in the Senate, in a very embarrassing position, because they'd be essentially saying, well, this is somebody we would like, but we won't allow him to be nominated. The argument being, and you saw it with the fascist clown Trump, you stall, stall, stall. don't deal with this. Put it off. Now, what happens if that has the impact that one can expect is that the election, the 2016 presidential election, becomes an enormously significant contest. And if you consider the candidates running for the Republican nomination, as they present themselves now, they all hew to the right. They all are deniers of various historic and cultural and scientific facts. They are all essentially in the thrall of a right-wing set of wealthy and populists who deny the truth of life, the truth of society, and the truth of science. And that situation is incredible. On the other hand, in the struggle for the Democratic nomination, Hillary Clinton, who I generally perceive as a neocon, and Bernie Sanders, who I generally perceive as a progressive, are engaged in a contest which becomes even more important. Because whoever is president of the United States after 16, that is in the year 17, will be in a position to once again push for a new judge on the Supreme Court. And remember, when the court is tied 4-4, every decision of the appellate courts stands as long as it's tied. So this is a real and true and serious constitutional crisis brought about largely by the Republican Party. And I wonder from you, all of you, how you see this. Where does this go? Is there any point in even talking about it? It's a very bizarre circumstance. It's a very bizarre situation. And it's very, very scary. In my memory, this is the first true constitutional crisis that I can recall. So let's hear from you. 231-8187. Who do we have? Who? Lance. Hello.
Yeah, you're having a great broadcast this morning, and I like to say you're the first person on the air who actually said constitutional crisis, and I take my hat off to you.
Sure.
And I can tell you are not a happy camper about any of this either.
No.
I can hear the gravity in your voice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I will ask you this question right quick, like, do you think Barack Obama is having to deal head on with white male supremacy in front of God and creation?
Well, I think the short answer is yeah. I mean, one of the things I didn't expect in my naivete was that the election of Obama would create in so many white people a psychological crisis of enormous extending, to the point where we have the accusation that he's a hidden Muslim, that he wasn't born in this country. Remember that Donald Trump has always been one of these birther people. So we actually see a craziness grabbing a whole bunch of what otherwise would, you would think, be responsible people on the right, pushing a weird view of the world, and a lot of people buying into it.
Joe, I underestimated the angst behind this black president, because I've had some white rural friends who I was really cool with. And when Obama became president, they became very cold to me.
Really? That's too bad.
Yeah, and I kind of scratched my head. I'm going, what was that all about? And I guess what I'm trying to say is that I may be like you. I may have underestimated the psychological issues when it comes up to Obama and his race.
Well, I think I knew that there would be some stress. But I never imagined the degree of racism that was revealed in all that.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
important. That is very important, because we as a culture need to come to grips with this issue in a way that positively gives everyone, every man and woman in the United States, power to vote and power to participate in the system, and equality in all things.
Well, now, mind you, the whole world is looking at this, too.
Oh,
yeah. Russia is looking at this. Africa is looking at this. China is looking at this. Europe is looking at this. And I'm going, are these guys really going to deny Barack Obama his constitutional right to put a new Supreme Court justice in? I have got to see how this one is going to transpire.
Well, I think, you know, I think the United States is more and more dependent upon its military power for its status. Its legitimacy as a representative of the quote-unquote free world is really being put to the test and found to be wanting. And I think that this, if I were a patriot of the conservative mindset, I would want to think very long and very hard, particularly if I was a senator, about making it impossible for Barack Obama to make this appointment. And I would be very frightened of the consequences of it, because where does it go? I mean, what happens? So let's say, let's fantasize, that Hillary or Bernie get into the presidency. Likely one or the other will. Because,
right.
Because the Republicans are too weird for most people. Anyway, right. So they get in, and then they make an appointment because it's been blocked up till then. It means a whole year, by the way, without a end to the tie votes in the Supreme Court. Okay, so this person, whoever it is, makes it in, and boom. That was your bell, by the way. Makes it in, and, he or she can't get in. And how does this look? What happens to the country? Anyway, I got to let you go.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much
for
bringing this up. You're the first person on the air that I've ever heard who brought up constitutional crisis, because everyone's like me. Let's see what happens. Thanks again.
Bye-bye. Okay. Thank you for the call. 231-8187. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO. We're looking at the question of what happens now with the Supreme Court. I mentioned, and I think it's important, that Scalia died on the ranch of Poindexter. And you got to remember who Poindexter was. He was a guy convicted of crimes and then later pardoned by the Republicans. And the crimes were about essentially arming rebel groups, trading arms to our supposed enemies, the Iranians, in exchange for support for a number of illegal activities. This is important stuff. And one of the things that characterizes American consciousness a lot is to just forget things. So I'd like to hear from you, your thoughts on what's going to happen with the Supreme Court, what needs to be done, what can be done, and really, where do we go from here? Who do we have? Brian, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
So I would say this is a crisis, you know, in mind. I look at it, I think the Republicans are looking at it like Naomi Klein's, you know, the crisis capitalism concept.
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, they're going to do, no matter what insanity, you know, how insane it looks, they're going to do it anyway. And you know, I mean, to be fair and not really pessimistic, I really feel like that most of what, and I think we all do, what most of what Senate and, you know, and Congress and the White House is doing is just against our interests overall. And, you know, it's insane. I mean, you know, I mean, it's just they're not in touch with reality. And I think this is just another way of them, you know, flexing their muscles. And no matter if it's good or not for the country, I think we will be in a constitutional crisis, but we are already, I mean, we're in crisis just everywhere. I mean, you know, down to the roads we drive on, you know, we're in crisis. The oil trains that are coming through Portland, of all places, you know, we are in crisis. And, you know, it's not, this is just another brick sort of in the wall, I guess, if you want to put it that way, and I think it's an opportunity just for the Republicans just to be more insane. And I think it's, I don't think it's a matter of them, you know, any more running things. I just think they do through, you know, their barbaric practices.
Okay. Well thanks. Thanks for the call. I sort of agree with you, and I wish I could disagree.
Sure.
But thanks for the call.
And you have a good one.
And I want to remind people, we're trying to keep to 3 minutes so we can get more people on. I have to say something that I think is really really, really important. It isn't just a constitutional crisis. We've really reached the point where we have an insane, hysterical, fact-denying right wing. It's not a question of, you know, conservatives versus liberals at all. It's really nothing to do with conservatism as one would rationally understand it, but more with hewing to a craziness that dominates the thinking of maybe 30% of Americans. So that's what's going on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, there's a real conceptual struggle around a kind of mild liberalism, which I would characterize as, typical of Hillary Clinton. And Bill Clinton, Bill, I think, did some very, very bad things for the economy and for the American working class. And then there's Bernie Sanders, who is essentially saying, look, we got to change the power structure. We've got to change the tax structure. We've got to get a situation which is more just for working people. How that'll play out, I have no idea. Watching the Republicans debate, I mean, it is a clown circus of the lowest common denominator. And it's a very frightening situation because meanwhile, while all this entertainment is going on in the government, the climate, the world struggles, the struggles of the rise of former colonies now characterized by things like the Islamic State, all of these things are happening. And they happen regardless of how we fool around here. And if they are not addressed, if they're not dealt with reasonably, things just get worse and worse and worse. So this is disturbing beyond the intellectual disturbance that I find in the situation. Wow. A sound effect. Okay, 231-8187. Who do we have? Jeff, you're on.
Jeff?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm really, really enjoying your show so far. I would add, for my personal view, that we'd be much better off with Bernie Sanders as president because he will appoint someone to the court, if Obama doesn't, who will at least be a moderate. And the court right now is positioned to make conservative decisions for the next 10 to 20 years. So we'll be just getting back to parity, basically. What disappointment. This isn't going to really fix anything. It's just going to make the court less onerous than it has been lately. I deeply distrust Hillary and her backers. And if you've read about the Clinton Foundation's activities in Haiti and elsewhere, I think you would also question her happy face neoliberalism. Nothing ever seems to get better where they go. And you can say that about American politics generally. We probably need to think about dialing back the empire a little bit, maybe shut a few of those 750 overseas military bases, which are costing us untold fortunes, and really think about doing what Bernie suggests, which is a little FDR-style home domestic economic reboot, rebuild the infrastructure, and get back to doing what we do best, which is doing stuff here, not blowing things up over there.
Okay. Thanks, well, thanks. Thanks very much for the call. I am not allowed under the rules to comment on for or against any specific candidates. I can tell you facts, but that's about the limit of it. 231-8187. We're talking about the constitutional crisis. I'm convinced that it will be one, if it isn't already, around the appointment of a new member of the Supreme Court. Remember, the court has been tied 4-4, four liberals, four conservatives, for quite some time. And Scalia was the most significant arguer for a very conservative point of view. He's now dead. That means that there's got to be a new appointment. And the Constitution is very clear. It's the president's job to make an appointment. It's the Senate's job to either agree or disagree with that appointment. But right now, the Senate seems to be saying, the Republicans in the Senate, that they aren't even going to hear it, that they're not going to do anything. And there is an insanity within, I consider it a real insanity because it's so irresponsible, within the group of people who are running for president on the Republican ticket. They're all yelling, oh, no, we won't do this. We want a new president. Well, probably, most likely, there's not going to be a new Republican president because every single one of those guys is so weird. 231-8187. Sean, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Chris Hedges said that Bill Clinton is probably the most backstabbing, traitorous president the poor and working class have ever had in this country. And you didn't have to be a very careful student of politics or the left in general to catch Naomi Klein's Nation column in the 2008 Democratic primary, where she had a column titled Obama's Chicago Boys. And it was all about how the future President Obama was picking people from the University of Chicago to head up his economic advisory team. And of course, once he got into the presidency, Larry Summers, straight out of the Bill Clinton administration, was given a top position. Take Rahm Emanuel, for example. Rahm Emanuel is at war with the Chicago Teachers Union. So my point about the Supreme Court would be, what difference is it going to make? I think Barack Obama is going to appoint people to smash the labor unions. I see a total continuity between Bill Clinton, George Bush, and Barack Obama, whether we're talking about the economy, foreign policy, or the environment. What difference would it make? Barack Obama is simply Bill Clinton part two. Elena Kagan, for example, had some minor ties with Goldman Sachs. I mean, the man he appointed to the attorney general position, Eric Holder, didn't indict a single Wall Street investment banker. What difference would it make? It's a complete, you know, Kucinich should have had the primary in 08. And if Sanders doesn't get it this time, I mean, you know, just forget about it because we don't have to worry about anything because it's all over. So,
well, that's a very harsh view, and I do thank you for it. Let's see how people respond. 231-8187. Remember, we're focusing now on the Supreme Court, on its function or functions, and on the right of the President of the United States, clearly defined in the Constitution, to make an appointment to the Supreme Court, and the responsibility of the Senate to take that recommendation, whatever, whoever it is, and to act on it, to say yay or nay. And what's happening right now is that essentially the Republicans in the Congress, in the Senate, pardon me, who dominate, are saying they're not going to hear it. They won't even hear it. And it's a terrible crisis, which has enormous impact, made even worse by the fact that the court is 4-4, liberal versus conservative. 231-8187, who do we got? Hey,
Joe,
BT.
How
you doing?
Hey, Joe, good morning. Let me breeze through my 3 points here in the 3 minutes.
Go for it.
Quick note on Poindexter. You know, I saw that. I remember him well, but when I saw something on the news the other day, it was a quick interview with him because did the host, Poindexter, the one who went in to get him because he was late for breakfast, and it was not the same John Poindexter. This guy was thinner. The face was totally different. So I am going to look into that. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it was the old Admiral Poindexter, but this guy they showed being interviewed was not the famous Poindexter from those years.
Well, all I can say is I made the assumption that it was the same guy.
So did I. But you know what? It may turn out to be. They may have just mislabeled this guy on this little news clip, but it wasn't the same Poindexter. By the way, Poindexter is the one who, when asked in a committee hearing if Reagan had lied or someone else had that great response. No, he didn't lie, but he was less than candid.
Right.
I remember that one. Now, as for this delay, see, I'm kind of a fair-minded guy. If I were the most conservative Republican senator in there, I don't really believe in this delaying. I mean, here it's February to say, you know, we're not going to let's let the next president pick the guy. I really wouldn't do that, but it's not. But you got to put this in perspective. So they were playing clips yesterday that Schumer did the same thing when Bush was president, and he did it much more than 12 months out. He said, "Oh, we're not going to move on somebody." I don't remember who it was who died. Then they both do this, and they both shouldn't do this. But each time someone does it, the other side will pretend that they've never done anything like this. It's probably a bigger issue now because it's so political. But anyway, now to get to Scalia, you know, I've learned to view the Supreme Court justices with a mixed bag. I mean, sometimes I was really glad Scalia was there, and sometimes I was not happy he was there. And I say the same thing about the who's that one who looks like the Wicked Witch of the West? Sometimes I'm really glad she's there for her decisions, and sometimes I'm not. So, but I don't ridicule this originalism, because you remember they get right to this point here. You remember that case from Florence, Oregon, the Kiolo case, where a guy was arrested because he had a grow operation, and the police used one of those heat-seeking devices or heat sensing, and they went in and got him. And he claimed that was a search. Just because they were using technology doesn't mean it was not a search. Mm-hmm. And Scalia is the one who brought that up in the case, and that was thrown out. That illegal, the evidence was thrown out because Scalia, you know, opened up his dictionary and he read search. You know, it's going.
Well, actually, you make a good point.
The framers, the framers knew what search meant, and of course, taking the newer technology into account, Scalia was saying you can't use new technology to get around this. A search is a search, and this is a search just because you don't physically go in. So it was thrown out. So that's not the kind of thing people would have predicted with that. And that's people need to respect that kind of a thing. And, of course, John Paul Stevens, of course, voted the other way. And he said, this is a good public service. So much for predicting how these guys are going to go. And I'm not surprised at Scalia's opinion on that anyway.
Yeah, I think I'm going to let you go because we're trying to keep it to 3 minutes. But I do appreciate your point. In fact, the irony of Earl Warren was that he was considered a very safe appointment from a conservative perspective. And it turned out that he took a look at the situation of African Americans and decided that separate is not equal. I mean, it was just true. And that led to, in 54 and 56, essentially, the integration of schools, which in turn, or the attention to integrate schools, which in turn was a major force in pushing for civil rights for all people in the United States, but most notably for African Americans. 231-8187, we're talking about the Supreme Court and the crisis of the Constitution that is brought about by the Senate saying, the Republicans in the Senate, that they will not confirm, they won't even hear any nominee of Barack Obama. And what they've done, and this is really important, is to try to dismiss Obama's legitimacy as president. This isn't their first move, and it certainly won't be their last. And it's very disgusting. And what we're really seeing is a legitimization of an incredible degree of treating other people as the other, and which amounts to what's happening with racism and with Barack Obama. Not that he's my favorite guy, but this is really important in that context. 231-8187, what's up with the Supreme Court? Jay, you're on the air.
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Hey, I have one Poindexter. The last caller is correct. It's a different Poindexter. Two, I want to make a vote. This three-minute time limit is great. It makes the show move faster, and everyone gets a chance to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But third, I'd like to hear you speculate on, do you think that Scalia's death changes the retirement plans for other Supreme Court justices, with Ginsburg or Anthony or maybe even Thomas consider retiring at this point?
I have no idea. That's an interesting question. Thomas, you wouldn't know if he retired or not except by his vote, because he never asks any questions and he never says anything. He's an amazingly silent justice.
Well, here's another question about Thomas. And now that Scalia is gone, do you think that opens up an opportunity for him to ask some of his originalist questions?
Well, it opens up a lot of opportunities. There didn't used to be this immense amount of concern around the Supreme Court, and that was largely because the court was pretty much the establishment, and that's no longer as clearly true as it used to be. I'm gonna let you go.
Thanks, Joe.
I appreciate your call. I have to do these promos. This morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, journalist and activist Arun Gupta speaks on terrorism, climate change, and capitalism, which is really a nice triumvirate. I mean, I think they're all really related. Chris Andre at 10, hosts Air Cascadia at 10:15. Flashpoints is off today. We'll hear Letters in Politics with law professor Marjorie Cohn on the ramifications of Supreme Court Anton Scalia's death and death, and law professor Amanda Hollis Brusky on the history of the legal theory of originalism. That you really should listen to, because it's very, very important. And we want to thank KBOO members for your generous support. Not a K-member? Oh no. You can become one by going to KBOO.FM and clicking on the donate today. You should do that. I mean, really, we exist on your support. You may not notice this, but we haven't got a lot of support from General Motors, the General Mills, or the generals in the armed forces. 231-8187, we're talking about the crisis brought about by Scalia's death and what's going to happen next with the Supreme Court and the refusal, the avowed refusal of the Republicans in the Senate to not hear any nominee made by the president, and the bizarre suggestion, which the press seems to be going along with, that the president in the last year of his office, despite the fact there was something like 19 times when this has happened, the bizarre suggestion that the president should not make a nomination. They're trying to disenfranchise, and have been steadily, Obama by a variety of means, and this is just yet another example. 231-8187. David, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having this discussion. I'm going to put forth the view that I don't think it's a constitutional crisis yet. I think that Obama's obviously going to call their bluff and is going to nominate somebody who's probably going to be quite reasonable, and they'll eventually cave, because if they don't, they're going to be totally bludgeoned with their own hypocrisy. It's been so pointed out that Scalia was this fundamentalist as to the wording of the Constitution, and we all know it's the president's job to appoint someone or nominate someone. That I think he might even do a recess appointment, but I think that more likely that the Republicans will be shamed into at least having nominations, and he may have to put up a couple people, but I don't think that they can stand up to the withering hypocrisy that the Democrats will be beating them over the head rightly with. And I do think that it is subconscious racism driving all the obstructionism to Barack Obama for all these years.
Yeah, I don't even think it's subconscious. But yeah, I appreciate your point. I strategically, the Republican Party, both in this contest for who they're going to have as presidential candidate, and that's been true for three elections now, and their behavior around science and reality, have put them in a position where they look like silly billies. And you would think that they would know that. The fact that they have a support base of hardened, conservative, reactionary, ignorant folk is not going to get them an election for president of the United States. Anyway, I think it's really an interesting situation. I think Obama's big choice is to make a very centrist appointment, which is where his politics probably lie, or to go with a more liberal appointment and say, what the hell? And it's going to be very interesting who he chooses. My guess would be a person of color. My guess would be a minority, not just a minority in that sense, but possibly a woman. This is all going to really be entertaining, but scary. And I do think that the media, the news media, is totally corrupt at this point.
Yes. Well, I don't think they'll be able to withstand it either, because the Constitution is quite clear. You know,
it is. It is very clear.
It doesn't say wait a year if the political party you don't want is in office.
Well, and you probably remember that the original framers were really fearful of political parties. That very soon, by 1804, had disappeared. So, you know, the hope for non-political parties was gone, or very early on. Anyway, thanks for the call, man.
Thanks.
231-8187. We're talking about the death of Antonin Scalia and the implications of that for the new Supreme Court appointee and the required role under the Constitution of the President of the United States to make an appointment to the Supreme Court and to have the Senate approve or disapprove of that appointment. Who do we have next? Harvey, you're on the air.
Thanks. Well, you know, I have an idea to help ensure the election of Bernie to president. And you know how the Republicans are always trying to throw legitimate voters off the voting list?
Oh, yeah, and in great numbers. And in fact, this is something that has become incredibly gross in the last few years.
And so I think it's time to fight back. And actually, so I had this idea, and the idea was Republicans for Bernie, because I think that Bernie is actually, it would be a bipartisan choice vote, because Bernie stands up for most Americans, whether you're Republican or Democrat. And I think that, so I went to Google, and I put in the words Republicans for Bernie, and lo and behold, all this stuff showed up.
Oh, my.
Many, many articles. Huh. And I haven't read any of them, because I just did this 10 minutes ago. But I feel that the Democratic leadership should really appeal to the Republican voters now, because I believe that Bernie is in their corner as well as in our corner. And I think that besides the show that's going on, I call it the clown show, they offer no nutrition, those guys. They're just tearing each other down. So I feel that Bernie really is the way to go. And I believe that Republicans will vote for Bernie in solidarity, because it is standing up for America. It is the right thing to do. And so I think that, once again, a lot of energy should be put in to compensate for all that voter theft for Republicans, for Bernie Sanders for president.
Okay, thank you very much for the call, man. Appreciate it. 231-8187. We're really trying, I think we should be trying to focus in on the question of who should be and how will it happen that a new justice is appointed to the Supreme Court. Understand that under the present circumstances, four justices are regarded as liberal, though this is simplistic, and four are regarded as conservative. That means that any case thrown to that court cannot be decided if they hew to their political markings, liberal and conservative. And that means that whatever the court that brings it to the Supreme Court has decided stands as law. And that can be very weird, particularly, I think it's the Fifth Circuit, which is Texas and parts of the South, have made some incredible decisions, particularly on women's reproductive rights and so on. Okay, let's hear from you, 231-8187. Theodore, you're on the air.
Hey, Joe, I had to call because you got me so riled up about your Poindexter thing and doing lazy research. It's a different guy.
It's a different guy. And is it really a different guy?
Of course it is. Oh. The other Admiral Poindexter is probably 95 years old now.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I apologize.
But this guy is a Democrat operative, and he's involved in banking, and he was also decorated by Mr. Obama 40 years post-haste for a bunch of black ops that operations he ran in Vietnam. The guy's essentially a special ops assassin.
I don't know about that part, but you sure it's not the same guy?
It's definitely not the same guy.
Oh, I apologize.
But let me just tell you, this ought to be a lesson. You don't, if you are a high government official, you don't, and you actually have a security detail, you shouldn't leave your security detail in Washington or wherever when you're going to what I call enemy territory.
Are you suggesting that there might have been foul play in his death?
Absolutely.
Wow, I don't think so.
Now, here's two things.
Yeah.
Of course he was 79, and of course he looked like he was at least 125 pounds overweight.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, why? Now, I happen to be a medical professional, and I would just ask you this. Why would you have an untrained fool that some Democrat operative, lowlife, down in southern Texas, down 100 or 50 miles from the Mexican border, who's not a medical professional, and they haven't cracked the guy's chest, why would you say the guy had a heart attack when you probably don't even know how to put a Band-Aid on?
Well, I can't answer any of that, but I personally think that you're maybe being a little conspiratorial in your thinking.
Of course I am.
Okay.
But this is the deal. Why would you? Why would you say it was a heart attack? If okay, Joe, if I saw a guy have clutching his chest and I was in his presence
mm-hmm.
at his last moment,
mm-hmm.
I could zero. Being a medical person, I could zero in and say it may have been that. It could have been a pulmonary emboli, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But I can't. Would you find a guy with dead with a pillow on his face?
Wait a minute. There was nothing
yeah,
about
a
pillow.
That's what they said. He had a pillow on his face. But you fight a guy dead, and you didn't see him in his last moments. How could you ever make a conclusion?
Well, are you... Now, wait. I'm a little confused. Are you... I mean, he was 79, overweight, and he also was a big eater, and he had a lot of issues that seemed to me to suggest a very great possibility of a heart attack. Certainly, he wasn't a physically active man. But anyway, I'm going to let you go. I think it's an interesting issue. I'm not really comfortable with the idea that for some reason Scalia was murdered. I just don't buy it. But anyway, 231-8187. We're talking about the selection of the next Supreme Court justice. We're talking about what the implications of it are, both for the Obama administration, for the administration that comes after, and the fact that the Republican candidates and the Senate. Republicans seem determined not to allow anyone to get that position of the ninth member of the Supreme Court. 231-8187, let's hear from you. Rebel, you're on the air.
Hello.
I would like to jump from that small conspiracy to an even larger one.
Whoa.
That the government is completely corrupted on both sides. Both sides actually work together to work against the people. It really doesn't matter who gets put into office with our vote, if we even have one, because the candidates are already pre-selected by the elite class. They choose basically who we vote for. We do not choose who we vote for. And any time that we put up anybody that challenges the system, they either get slammed in media or ridiculed by just about everybody based off mainstream media, right and left BS. You know, basically, if you're not in a right or left box, you don't exist. And there's a lot of people that are outside of that box. And the only people that really pay attention to those boxes are the ones that are caught up in all the election fervor of choosing the candidate that they select for us. And that's basically all I had to say about this whole topic.
Well, thanks for the call. 231-8187. We're talking about the death of Antonin Scalia, who, to his credit, was a great opera fan. I think opera's cool. Other than that, his judicial presence was really, really reactionary. Now, whereas there was a 5-4 conservative court, now there is a 4-4 court, a split, which means that any decision made will very likely come back and be decided by the lower courts. And the appointment of a new justice takes on enormous importance. Obama has the responsibility, which he intends, he says, to carry out, to make an appointment. That appointment goes to the Senate. The Senate has the right, and in fact is required under the Constitution, to give advice and consent, which means yay or nay, on that appointment. It's going to be very, very interesting, given that the Senate leadership on the Republican side is essentially saying, we ain't going to even hear him. You know, very weird, very, I think, very potentially serious crisis for the Constitution. 231-8187. Howard, you're on the air.
Good morning. Hey, I have something really quick.
Okay.
I don't know about conspiracies. I am a medical professional, but I have other theories about why there's no autopsy, et cetera, but we won't go there.
You mean there's not going to be an autopsy? I'm kidding.
I don't know that.
Go ahead.
But what I do want to talk about is the fact of the numbers that are being reported. Bernie Sanders received in New Hampshire 60% of the popular vote. Hillary Clinton received 38%, and there were 30 delegates awarded, 15 to each candidate. Now, that's somebody putting their thumb on the scale.
Well, that's because there are what are called superdelegates, which give power to the party.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. It's because of the superdelegates, and this is the most anti-democratic Democratic Party I've ever seen in my life. I can't stand it.
Okay, man.
Thank you very much
for the call. We've run out of time. We'll talk about this issue probably more than once. I am very concerned about the crisis that this all implies, and I think you all should be paying very close attention. And I want to point out that KBOO gives you the news. If you go to ABC, NBC, CBS, or whomever, they just come as close to absolutely lying and certainly distorting as it can be imagined, and they will just repeat any old silly thing. Stick with us. We go for the truth, Ruth.
Disorder from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Wamba at the Analog Cafe, Friday, February 19th at 10 p.m. Wamba is a Portland-based band that mixes traditional West African rhythms from Ghana with jazz, funk, and Afrobeat styles. Friday, February 19th, there will be a special two-set performance. The evening starts at 10 p.m. at the Analog Cafe, 720 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, journalist and activist Arun Gupta speaks on terrorism, climate change, and capitalism. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints is off today. We'll hear Letters and Politics with law professor Marjorie Cohn on the ramifications of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia's death, and law professor Amanda Hollis-Bresky on the history of the legal theory of originalism.